kind of a pain to carry around a whole lot of CDs, so I try and stick all of them inside one case, but that never works because then it puts too much pressure on the little door and always get cracked and split open. You have these heavy textbooks that are banging against them all day, CDs spill out and they get scratched by all the crumbs in your bag. I love my iPod. 100 CDs and something that's, you know, that big. So much music. It makes me feel powerful.
Hello! And welcome to the podcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, he wishes Siri would talk to him in that sweet ASMR. Oh, yeah. Leander Caney is here.
Hello, Erfan. Hello, Busta.
Also joining us, his beautiful beard also doubles as a rope for spelunking. Buster Kine is here.
Hey, man.
It's strong.
Oh.
It's a strong beard. It's like elven rope.
Yeah, I just anchor down, squat, and toss it over the edge.
See you guys later. Well, I should mention that that Leander Caney intro was actually not written by me, Leander. It was written by Skydive Sean from our new subreddit, thecultcast.reddit.com. Thank you, Sean, for supplying that wonderful intro. And because Sean had his intro picked, he is going to win himself a brand new pack of cult cloth shipped to him absolutely free. If you would like to contribute your own intro, if I pick it, A, it gets read on the show, and that will make you cool with all your friends. B, you will get free cult cloth. How great is that? I will put a link in the show notes to the subreddit thread where we have people making their suggestions, and I would welcome yours. I know we have some funny listeners. You guys should be able to come up with something creative that will make me chuckle. If it makes me chuckle, I'm going to use it. And especially if it's about Leander Caney, it's probably going to make me chuckle.
It's a pretty low bar, right? Just about anything.
But most things about Leander Caney will make me chuckle. That's true. Leander, do you want to tell us any stories before we dive into the show?
I'd like to say thank you to Tunnel Bear for sponsoring this show.
Yeah. Okay.
And Tunnel Bear is super easy to use, really nicely designed, and actually a fun VPN that
it's a fun VPN.
It is actually fun. It's super fun. It's fun to see the little bear tunnel away and then pop up somewhere else, and you can VPN all around the world, and it keeps you safe while you're online.
And where can people try Tunnel Bear, Leander? We do need to know the URL.
Shut up. You're making this. You're ruining my flow, dude.
Just Google it. Just Google Tunnel Bear. Google I don't got a link for you. Just Google it.
That's right. Yeah. No, it's gettunnelbear.com. And I asked about like a special link, but we haven't got one yet. So
okay, gettunnelbear.com. I also want to thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode. FreshBooks, the dead simple cloud accounting software made for entrepreneurs and small businesses who want to take the work out of managing their paperwork. And that is exactly what it does. Many of you know, I use FreshBooks. I pay for it every single month. It is completely worth the money. It saves me so much time because you will be able to invoice your clients, and they're very easy to send. And then if you need to remind your clients about paying the invoices, that's easy to do. It's easy to collect payments, and using FreshBooks, you'll be able to accept credit cards, PayPal transfers. And come tax time, which is right now, if you have a business, you're probably miserable. If you had been using FreshBooks the entire year, you wouldn't be, because you can track all your expenses in your bank accounts and just slurp them all right into your FreshBooks account. You can track all your receipts so easily. You can do all this from FreshBooks' brand new, beautiful, redesigned iOS app. You can do it on the web. They make it so easy to manage your business that you'll actually do it. Try FreshBooks if you haven't already. Go to freshbooks.com/cultcast. Enter cultcast in the how did you hear about us section. You'll get a 30-day free trial. And I promise you, you're going to love it. freshbooks.com/cultcast. Okay, well, should we start with this somewhat sad news? This is Apple's earnings call. And it seems pretty clear to me, Buster, that
they're doomed.
Apple's through. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're through. And we'll keep covering them as long as they remain in business. But I imagine it's only going to be weeks now before.
Might as well burn your MacBook because it's worthless.
Yeah, burn your MacBook. Tim Cook's probably in his office right now. He's got his suitcase open. And he's just packing up his desk. And they're just going to call it. I mean, they had a good run, right?
Yeah.
13 years, yeah.
13 years. And but this quarter, Buster, they made no money. Is that right? That was the problem.
No, they still made a ton of money. They didn't make as much money this quarter as they did this quarter last year. They made less money this quarter than they did last year. And it's the first time that that's happened in 13 years where they didn't grow in revenue.
Okay, so they did make some money. That's
they
good.
Made $10 billion in profit still. So it wasn't.
That should be enough to keep the doors open for several more weeks.
They can buy a spaceship with it, you know?
That would be actually pretty cool. They should. I think we talked about this in a previous episode. They should equip the spaceship campus so that it can fly into space.
Oh, I know. They need to start doing a SpaceX rival right there in the middle.
That's a great idea. Campus. That's a great idea and a good use of revenue, I think. So. The quarter that they were trying to beat was tough. In fact, I would imagine this year is going to be tough for them for all the quarters because they had a bang-up year last year, especially with the iPhone 6 and the 6S. I mean, those two phones have been selling very well, haven't they?
Yeah. The iPhone 6, I mean, it was Apple's first big screen iPhone, so they had tons of sales. Also, they had tons of pent-up demand this time last year because they weren't able to make enough iPhone 6s last year. So Tim Cook said that the iPhone 6s demand was greater than the iPhone 5s demand. It's just compared to the iPhone 6, it can't even compete.
Do you guys know if the iPhone 6 is the biggest product launch they've ever had? I think it is. Has there ever been an Apple product that's more popular than the 6?
I can't think of one. I mean, I was going to say something...
Perhaps the Newton?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I don't think of anything. And I can't think of anything that's been that big.
I can't think of a product that Apple has released. Maybe the first iPhone.
Sales are like minuscule compared to what they're doing now. Like there was less than 10 million in its first year.
I just meant as far as buzz, though.
I would say the iPods. Those used to get like tons of hype too.
Yeah, I guess the first generation. Actually, I take that back.
The
maybe
video
not the
first, one.
Like the third generation iPod. Yeah, people were in a frenzy over the iPod or over the iPhone 6. I mean, those lines. I don't think I'll ever forget those lines. They were the longest Apple lines I've ever seen. People were freaking out. They were robbing people in the streets to get that iPhone.
They
6.
Were literally.
They were literally robbing people in the streets. And at 7-Elevens nationwide to get their hands on that phone. But it's actually this call, though many people were reporting the bad news, there were actually some optimistic things to take away from the call, I thought. Number one, Apple spending on R&D increased by $1.1 billion compared to the same six-month period last year. $1.1 billion increase. What do you guys think that's going to?
A car.
Apple car.
Let's go into a car, don't you think?
Well, they're buying real estate all over San Jose and Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
They're up to a lot of things. They're equipping a lot of stuff out. Did you see? I mean, there was a report recently about all the real estate that they're buying up. And I think they're investing in some pretty big things for sure.
They are investing way more than they were previously. And this could only mean, I think, an Apple car. I can't even think of another section of technology that Apple could enter besides maybe the camera market that could be as huge as the car.
Augmented reality.
Right.
I don't know if that's going to be as prevalent.
What are you talking about? It's going to replace your iPhone. So, I mean, that is a huge new category.
You think it eventually is going to be called the EYE phone, and it's just going to be a unit that goes over your face.
Right. Maybe.
You're not even going to hold it anymore.
Did you see that HTC? I think they had a slide. They're predicting 4 years that you know phones are going to tank, and VR is going to take off.
And they think it's going to replace your iPhone entirely, or replace your phone entirely.
In some ways, that or augmented reality, I think will probably be the thing that kind of replaces your iPhone, and then maybe virtual reality would be more of like replacing the entire computing experience. I don't know.
I'm excited about virtual reality and augmented reality, and I definitely want to get a unit and try it out, especially to play games. But I kind of wonder how popular it's going to be in the next 4 to 5 years. I don't see it becoming ubiquitous. I think that guys who are super into technology might be into trying it out, but I don't think it's going to replace your iPhone. I mean, I don't even know if that will ever happen. Do you guys honestly believe that could happen?
Yeah. If something has to replace your iPhone, there's going to be a new thing, like, after it, eventually. Like, we're not always going to have, like, little blocks like the iPhone. Eventually, like, the technology is going to become smaller and, like, more embedded to our lives and more transparent, so you don't even notice it. And so you won't have an iPhone.
There's a lot of hype about this VR and AR stuff, you know.
Yeah,
and
if
you
see, I know.
Kevin Kelly had a cover story in this month's Wired magazine, and he went to Magic Leap, which is a startup in Florida. I think they've raised more money than any other startup in history. Is that right?
They've raised a ton of money without even showing off a product. That's all
right.
I know about it.
They don't even have a prototype either, do they?
They don't have a prototype?
I don't think so. I think that's what he said. I mean, not a prototype, a public prototype. I beg your pardon.
Okay.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, they're not selling it. It's not like...
not like the Google Glass prototype?
Right.
Or
like Microsoft's, whatever their thing is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They don't have a developer edition, but they've got all these people to sign on to it already.
The text sounds super exciting from that Wired piece.
Yeah, and much more sophisticated than you imagine, where they're taking care of all sorts of stuff like peripheral vision, you know, tracking, sound, the feel, tactility, you know, being able to interact with it. I mean, it was really, you know, it does sound fascinating, but I'm like with Irfan, you know, because there's a lot of talk about. He said, didn't they say that people were starting to use them? The team was using these to get their work done. For productivity, maybe it wasn't at Magic Leap, but at one of these VR companies, like, they're starting to work inside them now, and they're actually looking at screens, like a computer screen inside a VR headset, which
right.
sounds kind of crazy. But
it's like playing GTA 5 and watching TV in your apartment in GTA 5.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But he said that because there's problems with fatigue. You know, people get fatigued if you're in a VR environment for more than like half an hour or so. But if you stare at a flat screen in a VR environment, you don't get that tired. So you can sit there for 8 hours working away on a virtual screen. I know, it's kind of weird. I have to go back and read that again because I'm not sure I'm going to remember this correctly. I might be mistaken. But
fabricating this entire thing.
Yeah. No, I think he said they were working. There were teams that were working in it now, and that's the vision, right? You know, that it'll become the main computing environment that you work in.
Yeah.
Which I find kind of, you know, I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see, like, how controls shape up with that, you know, because you can't see your hands when you're in virtual reality. So
yeah.
I feel like the control scheme is going to be really limited.
Well, that's why they have those magic gloves and things, right? And also the paddles you hold and stuff. So you can see your own hands. And one of them, I think, has a pretty good solution. Didn't he say one of the systems has a pretty good, you know, system for showing you, for giving you, you know, for letting you know where you are,
uh-huh,
and where your hands are, what they're up to.
I saw something at the Intel booth at CES where they had these, they were really like weird joysticks, and yeah, you could like see them floating around and create 3D drawings and stuff inside a virtual environment. It was pretty interesting.
Right. And actually, he said that was one of the things, that was the thing he got the most pleasure out of, all the demos that Kevin Kelly had was being able to create. He was using this light sculpting application where he was creating, like, I think, sort of sculptures, 3D objects, using these sort of light paintbrush. And he said that was the best blast. That was the most fun he had. And he said that was a revelation to him because, you know, he felt as though, so far, you know, the only applications we've seen are for, you know, games. Yeah, right. For sort of, for being entertained. But he said it was actually a really compelling creative environment. That was interesting.
But let's say they perfect all the or perfect. that's a phrase I use to mean that it's just perfect, you know, absolutely perfect. All the mechanisms that they need to build in so you can see your hands, interact with stuff in VR. Let's say all that stuff is superb. Even if they made that stuff perfect, would you still want to trade something that you could hold in real life that you can move away from your face however you'd like with your hand and trade that experience for a VR experience? I don't know if I would. I don't know if they can make it good enough for me to want to always just use VR and give up walking and my iPhone for one of those Wall-E style, you know, chairs with the screens the right in front of my face.
Yeah. I agree. But I think eventually, like, and that's kind of the problem with, like, Google Glass and HoloLens is, like, there's that barrier, basically, is what from the real world. Mm-hmm. I think eventually, like, as the tech, like, becomes smaller, you might be, like, more prone to use it just because it'll seem more natural. Once we get the contact lens computers, we'll be all set.
Yeah, you mean when you're born, they just pull your eyes out and install your digital eyes, your actual iPhones. Well, one of the other things I'm curious about is I saw an optometrist recently, and my eyes were hurting. Like, I just had like eye pain, and I was really sensitive to lights. And I went and saw an optometrist, and he was like, "What do you do?" And I explained I was in front of a computer screen a lot. And he said, "Oh, well, this is really typical. You have computer eye strain." He's like, "Your body was not designed to look at something more than, 20 feet away or like 15 feet away. And when you have to look at something a lot closer than that, especially if it's close to your face, you really have to strain your eyes to do that. And eventually your eyes get tired and they start giving you the symptoms that you have." And so it kind of makes me wonder about virtual reality. Like, you're putting that screen on your face. How far is it away from your face? Maybe 2 or 3 inches?
Yeah.
Like, how long could your body do that before you really have to replace your eyeballs with digital versions?
Well, one of the things the Magic Leap thing does is he said exactly that. You know, one of the problems you have with VR is that you're focusing your eyes on a screen that's only a few inches away, and it actually ruins the illusion. So they have some kind of system, and it's you know, a secret, so they wouldn't talk about it. But they said that your eyes will focus all the way to infinity, and
it's like a light field technology or something they're calling it.
And so they're
it.
Like sitting there in a relaxed state?
Yeah.
Right, so you don't get that, yeah.
Apple definitely needs their next big thing, don't they? The iPhone, it was a revolution, and it's taken them to this point where they've made more money than they ever have before, and you know, it took them into a different stratosphere. And now the iPhone is just not as exciting. They're reaching saturation point, it seems like, where everyone and their mom has one of these things. And they really kind of need that next device to keep up that hot as fire momentum. Don't you guys think?
Yeah, but I have no idea what it would be. Because like we're talking about, they're spending lots of money in R&D, and that's possibly a car, maybe like VR, AR. And none of those things are going to come out like any year soon or be a mainstream product any year soon. So I don't really know what else they can come out with that's going to be amazing. The Apple Watch hasn't been like a gigantic success.
No, but it hasn't.
I think, but I mean, it's also, you know, this is one of the things that was clear in the conference call too, right? I mean, it's no way a disaster either. I mean, the press seems to portray it as a bust, as a flop, but it's a $6 billion a year business, right? Which it makes it bigger than Rolex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm starting to see them in the wild all the time around in some, you know, admittedly at San Francisco, right? So this is like, ground zero for this kind of thing. But, I think, I think is definitely going to be a mainstream product. Some kind of watch.
The Apple Watch, you mean?
Yeah. I think it's going to change, obviously, right, in the next 2 or 3 generations. And it needs to get faster for sure. And it needs to have things like native apps. And I think the UI is going to be fixed. You know, there's a whole bunch of problems with it. But I think in general, I think it's going to be a mainstream app.
Apple's pushing developers for native apps by, is it the beginning of June? Do you guys know if it's June or July?
I think it's the end of June, June 30th. They all have to be native or something.
Okay. So at that point, they should at least be a lot more responsive. And it will be interesting to see what happens around that time, because I kind of wonder how much value developers are seeing in the Apple Watch at this time. I still haven't really found a compelling Apple Watch app that I use consistently. A lot of them seem slow or just not very useful, even if they are fast. So it'll be interesting to see if developers are willing to put in the work to make their watch apps native or not, because that kind of stuff costs them money, right? If they're not seeing a return on investment, then maybe they'll just pull their apps from the App Store. But to your point, Leander, you kind of mentioned this quickly, but I thought this was definitely worth mentioning. So this is a crazy statistic. So Apple Watch is estimated to have made around $6 billion in its first year. and Rolex made about $4.5 billion. That's total revenue. So we're not looking at profit, just total revenue. So Rolex, one of the oldest, most notable, popular watch brands in the world, is making less money, significantly less revenue than the Apple Watch is already. I thought that was incredible. And when you think about the Apple Watch and its many flaws, of which it does have many, it's already making tons of money for Apple. And you think it might be like a small business because it's Apple's – it's a smaller product from Apple. But it's one of the biggest businesses in the world already.
Well, it's the biggest watch businesses in the world. And I think,
yes, but how many businesses, just even period, make $6 billion in 1 year?
Yeah, I know. It's astonishing. I mean, there were some other crazy numbers too from the call. You know, they were saying Apple Services is now, isn't their second biggest source of revenue? This is things like Apple Music, yes, and iTunes and iCloud.
But don't they run those things at break even? I mean, they're pretty much giving away all the money that comes in from those services, aren't they?
That's what they said. I think it's making profit now for sure. But yeah, it's not one of their mainstays of their businesses, but it's turned into a huge business. I mean, do you remember the numbers, Buster? Wasn't it 10 billion?
Yeah, it was pretty high.
And it would be, if you broke it out into its own company, it would be one of the biggest companies in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
That alone. And this is on top of the iPad business, which, again, you know, sales are declining there, but that's still a big – they're still selling how many millions of iPads? I mean, they sold, what, 10 million last quarter?
10.3 million units.
Right, which I think is – that's also a pretty, you know, a big business.
Yes. I think it's safe to say that if you were a business owner and you had any one of these products as your only product, right, you'd be delighted.
Patty, yeah. Well, they're all on their own. You know, they would be among Silicon Valley's biggest businesses if they all stood alone. But then put together, it's a monster.
You know, the thing about the iPad business, I have thought this ever since the iPad was introduced and all the Android tablets and the tablet marketplace emerged. I kind of wonder if there's ever been a market for tablets, quote unquote, because the iPad has always dominated that market. And I so rarely see tablets that are not iPads in the wild. I virtually never see them. And the iPad is still popular, but the tablet market is shrinking. Well, and no. I don't think that people want tablets. I think they've always just wanted iPads.
You see tablets everywhere. Tablets are turning up everywhere. Look at TV. You know, look at, like, you know, the Warriors basketball games, right? All the team have them. The coach has got one. The reporters have got them. You know, I think, you know, you go into business to go get lunch. You see tablets everywhere. People are always on their tablets. And I think the thing is that they don't upgrade their tablets. People are still using their first iPad. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people are still using, you know, the second iPad or the third iPad. It's not on an annual upgrade schedule. It's not even on a two-year upgrade schedule. It's more like on a laptop schedule. People are holding onto them for 4 or 5 years, and then they'll begrudgingly upgrade. You know,
you think the laptop upgrade cycle is 4 to 5 years?
I don't know what it is officially, but you know,
dude, I can't imagine having I know a lot of our listeners out there probably keep their Macs and or their MacBooks for 4 to 5 years, but a PC for 4 to 5 years?
Yeah, PC definitely not. But the upgrade, you know, anyway, I don't know what the official one is, but yeah, I think people would hold on to them for 4 or 5 years.
I'm like a three-year guy. Three-year guy on a MacBook Pro is
right,
like,
but that's your main machine, right?
And
it's running your whole life and everything you do on it. But
it is running my whole life. I don't do anything it doesn't tell me.
I don't, you know, like, and Tim said during the call that this quarter, the current quarter, was going to be a big one for the iPad, right? And I presume he didn't specify, but he's talking about the new smaller iPad Pro, which is a beautiful tablet. It's really nice. I think, you know, it's going to continue to be a huge part of people's computing lives.
I also thought it was interesting they said that the iPhone SE is in demand even more than they expected, and they can't keep up with demand. Of course, I kind of wonder how true that is, you know, because it's like, would Tim Cook say that? Wouldn't he say that even if it didn't have huge demand? Maybe not.
Well, I mean, what were the expectations as well?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, oh, it blew away our expectations, but he didn't say what those were or how many sales they had in the first week or anything.
You could probably estimate it, right? Because didn't they say that they gave some numbers out, didn't they? They said that the product mix, like the percentage, wasn't a quarter or a third of sales were like 4-inch phones. So you could probably work it out.
I didn't hear that.
Let's talk about the Apple Watch a little bit more. So there were some rumors out that the – and this is from the Wall Street Journal. They're pretty reputable about this kind of stuff – that the next Apple Watch will have a faster processor. Surprise, surprise. But they also thought that it would get its own LTE connection, so it wouldn't have to tether to your iPhone, which I guess is a big deal for a lot of people. They don't like the fact that their Apple Watch has to tether. I don't necessarily mind that as much as I thought I would.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting that they think that it's going to get an LTE radio because, I mean, A, battery life is going to be, I would imagine, affected drastically if you're using LTE in your Apple Watch. I would guess it's going to tether to your phone. Unless it loses that connection, in which case it might switch to LTE.
Yeah.
You know, just to save on battery power. Because, you know, like when you're using your phone a lot, your battery dies so fast. I mean, imagine if you were using LTE on your watch with that tiny little battery.
Well,
it's going to be dead within a couple hours.
And they're going to make it thinner too, supposedly. So I don't know how the battery is going to be able to power everything new that they're getting in there.
This is probably the biggest reason I think that. I kind of think this is a strange move, is at least in the US, anytime we have a device, a new device that uses data, you have to pay your freaking carrier money to use that device on your data plan that you're already paying for. So you pay the carrier for the data, and then you pay them to use the data. So you would have to pay an additional fee to use your Apple Watch on LTE, unless Apple's able to work out some deal with the carriers, which I doubt. And the normal data fee, data access fee that the carriers charge is about $10. Would you pay $10, Buster, to let your Apple Watch access your data?
No, because, yeah, I'm cheap.
Dude, I would never pay $10. Would you, Leander?
I don't know. They'd have to have a good, compelling reason to do it. I mean, it's kind of cool to think that it could be, you know, if it were independent of your phone. And it could do a bunch of things. But I don't know. I doubt it. I mean, because you can't surf the web and you can't. Do email.
Sure you can with the new Safari for iPhone browser.
Awesome.
It comes with a free magnifying glass for you to hold over the screen and a pair of tweezers to make your selections.
Right, a little tiny little finger, little that you attach to your index finger. Right.
The iFinger. It's like a little toothpick that you use to like scroll around and like pick the links.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Tim Cook's going to do a demo on
stage. Yeah, I'd pay $10 for that.
Yeah, actually, if it came with all that stuff, I think I would pay $10 too. But it would become my main machine.
Haven't people been asking for GPS? Isn't that the thing that people really want?
Yeah, I would like that too. I mean, I use my Apple Watch mostly for fitness, like running or going on a hike, and it's not good anytime you're doing like an extended activity.
It would also be cool to stream like Apple Music without needing your iPhone.
I guess
that would be really cool for runs. Don't you go on a lot of runs and stuff?
Yeah,
and you got to take your iPhone with you too, right? I mean,
yeah,
there's barely any room in those short shorts of yours to carry an iPhone.
Yeah, indeed. I should just get an iPod Shuffle, I guess.
Your lady's using an iPod Shuffle?
No, but I'm thinking about maybe I should just get one. Go old school.
Yeah, rather than carry around your iPhone, Apple Watch. That may not be a bad idea.
They still sell the little square one. I was really surprised to see that in the store the other day.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
In an Apple store?
Yeah.
It's been such a long time since I've even considered the iPod. I mean, that product just sits there and just rakes in cash for Apple, but they don't do anything with it. I can't even remember the last time they updated those.
Yeah, I don't recall either. It was a year or more ago. 18 months, 2 years.
Like $50 still?
I think so, yeah. That was a really great little iPod, especially for the gym, and I can imagine people would still buy it just for that.
Yeah, I think they're popular among kids, too, still. Because a lot of kids, you know, don't have iPhones, so their parents just get them like an iPod or something. Let's talk about some iPhone 7 rumors, Buster. This is kind of an amalgamation of all the rumors we've heard so far. And I feel like now we have a really good picture of what the iPhone 7 is going to be. And I would say I'm not all that titillated by it.
What? You're not titillated by dustproofing and waterproofing?
Actually, waterproofing was amongst my most requested features when we did our iPhone 7 wish list. So if it were waterproof, that would actually be a major feature for me.
Oh, Okay.
Well, for Buster you take it in the 2, water? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, for Buster 2.
Oh, I saw somebody on a hike at a waterfall. They had the Samsung phone that's all waterproof. That
the Galaxy 6 Active?
Yeah, that little Wayne dumps champagne on all the time. The Edge one.
Yeah, well, if you're drinking as much champagne as him, you need a phone that's waterproof.
I was pretty jealous because it can, yeah, you can just jump in the water, jump in a pool with it. It's fine. I mean, no.
Take it in the shower.
Yeah, don't need a case.
You could listen to, you could take your iPhone into the shower and listen to music. You could listen to podcasts. That would be super cool.
Yeah.
It would make the phone much more useful, I think. So that would be a big feature for me. Dustproof, okay.
Whatever.
That would be kind of cool so that when I'm roaming the desert, I don't have to worry about dust getting in my phone.
What about making it shatterproof? Isn't that more important?
Yes.
Don't more people drop them than anything else?
Oh, I mean, I break probably 2 a year at least.
Yeah, this is especially important feature for you. Digitimes is also claiming that the iPhone 7 will have a new touch-sensitive home button that sits flush with the rest of the screen. I find this very hard to believe. Buster, what do you think?
Well, it's supposedly made out of liquid metal, and that way the home button doesn't move at all when you press it down. It's just like the liquid metal just they can sense the small pressure changes that way. So it would make it so home buttons don't break all the time. I've never had a home button break, but...
I haven't either.
Maybe it's a problem.
I just think that we've seen so many patents and we've heard so much banter about Apple wanting to move the home button into the screen in some way. This is not how I would have imagined them doing it. This kind of seems like a stopgap type move.
Maybe they haven't figured out how to yet, or they're not ready yet.
Right? Because isn't the whole purpose of getting rid of the Touch ID and the home button and integrating it into the screen so they can make the phone... They can make the screen bigger, but keep the phone size the same. And so this doesn't allow them to do that. This just kind of makes it more durable.
Yeah, but that's good.
Right. I mean, that's good. That's good, but hardly
not something you're gonna, feature. Yeah, you're not going to rush out to get that new home button on your phone.
Exactly. You know? Damn, is that the new home button? What awesome. What phone is that? Is that the iPhone 7?
Smart Connector 2? That's sick, bro.
So some of the other rumors we've heard, just to kind of round them all up into one place, smart connector. Interestingly enough, I'm not sure why you'd want to pair a smart keyboard with this.
So you can charge it while you're using the lightning port. I really do think that's why it's there.
I'm sorry. You're right. We talked about this before, too. Yes, what he said. Dual lenses, bigger, at least in the 7 Plus, bigger battery, potentially wireless charging, which would I don't think we're going to get this unless they change the body of the actual iPhone. And unfortunately, no clear design change. It's going to look pretty much the same as the 6 and the 6S. Oh, lightning headphone jack and cleaner rear shell design with minimal antenna lines. So if this ends up being true, I think that the iPhone 7 is going to become... Well, I was going to say the new 6 or the new S model iPhone.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but basically like an SS model, right? Like a refinement of the S.
The SS, right? That's going to be a great product name.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to call it the 7SS. And that might be a little taboo in some countries. But if they do this... Do you think maybe they're going to be going to just a new number every year?
That's what I would like to see them change the naming scheme, I guess, on pretty much every device, but especially the iPhones, like the 6, 6S, 7. I don't really dig it.
Yeah, well, especially because we've been trained to know that the 6 or the S years are the upgrade years with the same body style. But this kind of throws all that out the window.
Mm-hmm.
So it would seem like maybe they were going that route. But in either case, we've read rumors that the iPhone 7S/8, whatever they end up calling it, is supposed to have a drastic redesign. And seeing the specs now for this iPhone 7, I kind of believe that's the way it's going to work. We've heard about glass front and back on the 7S and a return to the design of the iPhone 5, kind of. So seeing how mundane these upgrades are, does that kind of make you think, Buster, that we're going to get some pretty major upgrades for the next 7S/8?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope, yeah.
They got to do something.
We get a big redesign because, I don't know, the 6 body is pretty, but It does feel like kind of stale, you know?
Yeah.
The iPhone hasn't really changed much. 3D touch, I don't think, has been a very big feature at all. So it's been pretty boring the last year, and this year will be super boring too.
Are you guys using 3D touch?
Never.
I keep forgetting. I keep meaning to use it. I use it by accident. When I do use it by accident, I go, oh yeah, right. Yeah, it is like kind of useful.
You have to, yeah, I told it the same way.
Yeah, every now and again I remember to use it, and I make a conscious choice, you know, like checking through email or looking at messages or even opening web pages is pretty good for that. Opening links. Because there's nothing, you know, in Safari, don't you open a link and you get taken to a new page, and then, you know, it's even worse than having a, you know, I've got so many tabs that are open, I can't remember what I was looking at. You got to go back in and try to find the tab you were looking at. So it's kind of useful for that. I like it for that.
So you're not peeking and popping all that often, huh, Buster?
Dude, I'd never peek or pop.
Sometimes I'll pop, but rarely will I peek. Yeah, I forgot it was there too. I don't know what that says. I don't know if that just says that, in Leander's opinion, I'm guessing, that I'm just not trained appropriately. Right. It's my fault.
It is, because it's your habits, isn't it? You're just not used to doing it that way.
Or if it's because the feature, you know, when all is said and done, it's just really not that useful.
I don't know. You know, I'd seen people on Twitter, you know, some of the cough iMore folks were going on about it, and they were, you know, saying that they use it all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But they being all snooty about it. They're like, we use Beacon Pop all right. the time. Yeah, don't you?
Yeah, there was a little air of superiority about it.
You know, I should try to get back into it and just see if it makes any difference.
Well, someone was asking me about Siri the other day. Like, do I use Siri? And I was like, yeah, you know, I actually do use Siri. I've started using it on the TV, especially. It's great on the Apple TV. It actually works really, really well. And it's a really great way to control the TV, especially for things like rewinding.
On the Apple TV, you said?
Yeah,
me too. It's actually very good.
And then I realized, I use it kind of a lot in on my watch as well. You know, I use Siri fairly frequently to reply to texts, and it's usually pretty good, even in the car. You know, like if I get a text from someone, I can dictate an answer real quick. And then I was like, oh yeah, and I set it for timers, and I set it for, you know, alarms and for calendar items, reminders. Yeah. And I was like, you know, it adds up to quite a lot of the things. But then I realized, well, there's a lot of things I don't use it for. And I think mainly because I just haven't trained, you know, I haven't got into the habit of using it. So even when, you know, the point being that even when Siri doesn't work on the watch or on the phone, because it's a habit, it's like, it doesn't put me off. I still continue to use it. And I think that was the biggest point. You know, it's actually really, it's sort of, you know, getting into the habit of doing something a certain way and, you know, for Siri or for peeking and popping and all that kind of stuff.
You know, I just got a Amazon Echo.
Oh, that's great. That's really good.
After all the freaking, like the last five shows, I've heard you nonstop say how great it is. And they went on sale the other day. They had I think it's like the anniversary of the Echo or something, so they dropped in price. So I bought one. And I'm going to be curious to see how much better it works. I'm expecting big things, Leander. You have sold this thing to me.
Haven't you sold it?
You are the Echo's number one salesman.
Yeah. It's absolutely fantastic. I love it. I think, you know, all these things give you an insight on what it's like going to be like to talk to computers, and especially the Amazon Echo.
I've got some smart devices in my house. I have a smart thermostat, which I have to talk about in this show eventually, and then the Philips Hue smart lights, which I use all the time. And I'm constantly trying to control the lights from my Apple Watch, and my Apple Watch fails miserably, I'd say 60% of the time. It just doesn't understand what I'm trying to get it to do. So I'm really interested to see how much better the Echo works with the Philips Hue lights, because you said the voice recognition on the Echo is better than Siri.
Yeah, it is.
Would you say significantly better?
Well, yes, but it's the caveat being that I only use it for very limited use cases, right? So to do a certain number of things. But yeah, it's almost uncanny, because the things you do ask it to do, play the radio, set a timer, you know, ask it simple questions, it's super fast. It's uncanny fast, you know, almost giving you the answer almost before you finish the sentence.
Wow. Okay.
And the recognition is almost 100%. So you don't get that, you know, you don't have to go back and repeat it and then try to use all these kind of weird, you know, computer friendly words or phrases. So it is much nicer, but it's also, I think, you know, it has a smaller subset of things that it does. So,
okay.
But yeah, it's great. It really does work well. And like I said, it's like, oh, you know, it gives you that feeling of what it will be like what it is like to talk to a computer. You know, it's not a pain anymore.
Yeah, because with the Apple Watch, it oftentimes is a pain. Or you'll say something and it spends like 10 to 15 seconds trying to determine what you said. And,
right, yeah. Well, then,
and just like, just takes an eternity.
And you're like, forget it.
Yeah, I'm just like, yeah, forget it. I'll just go get my phone. It's right there. You know, I can walk 2 seconds, just get my phone and just do it there. So I'm really curious to see how well that works. Well, I'll tell you what. We've got one more segment coming up here. Leander talked with David Pierini about another story from the weird, wacky world, the cult of Apple. And but what did you guys talk about this week?
Oh, he's got Leander. A great story. Great story about a 15-year-old kid who is one of the top 10 Apple collectors in the world. He even has an Apple One. He has an Apple
wow.
One. He scored an Apple One, and he did this by mowing lawns.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know what? Good for that kid. Instead of whining and complaining,
right?
And trying to get someone to buy it for him, he went out and busted his hump and earned money for his own Apple One.
Yeah, yeah, crazy.
We gotta get this kid on the show. Maybe he could be a host.
Right.
We know he'll be a hard worker. Okay, so before we jump into that segment, Leander, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Tunnel Bear?
Right, yeah. So thanks again to Tunnel Bear for sponsoring the show. Tunnel Bear, superb VPN client. VPN being virtual private network. And this thing protects your traffic online from snoops and from the NSA and from anybody who wants to take a look at what you're doing. And it's actually essential. Like, it's got to be right up there, top five pieces of software or apps that you have to use. Can't recommend it highly enough for public surfing. You know, like if you do any work at a coffee shop or you travel through airports, you've got to have it a VPN. It's crazy not to. It really is crazy not to have a VPN, use a VPN to encrypt all of your traffic. Even though a lot of stuff is encrypted already, this is, you know, a must have.
And didn't you say that there were some stories you brought up last week about how people would like monitor like what you're browsing and then blackmail you?
Right. Well, this is I'd read a story that saying that some security researchers suspect that, you know, there's going to be a wave of attacks, blackmail attacks, you know, where people their browsing history will be used against them and used to blackmail them. Because this stuff is all getting logged by your ISP, and it's pretty easy to try to tie, you know, some stuff that you may not want people to know you've been looking at to your IP address. And so, there was a lot of speculation that this kind of thing might become the target of hackers and black hats and criminals, you know, that you really should be using, you should be cloaking this stuff all the time, even when you're on your home network or a machine at work. You know, you should be taking care to be private, you know, of your privacy, and you should be making sure that there's, you know, as few breadcrumbs as possible. And it's
especially if you're looking at the stuff Leander's looking at. You don't want the black hats getting a hold of that.
You should be doing it for everything you do, really. I mean, I think a lot of people that feel that they're safe, you know, security and obscurity, and that no one's going to be bothering to look at what they're looking at, but this internet is a huge spy machine. Everything you do is logged. Every single thing you look at is logged. Everything you search for, everything that you buy, everything that you look up. And I think there are a lot of cases, you know, I mean, if you have some sensitive health issues, and that can affect everything from your employer to insurance, your relationships, you know, you may not want this stuff for the public to know. And I think there's this feeling in the security world that this is going to become the next big frontier in hacking, and that it might come back to haunt people. So you should be careful about what kind of breadcrumbs you leave on the internet, and an easy to use VPN like Tunnel Bear is a great solution for that.
Oh, and by the way, the 500 megabyte plan is free, Leander.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Yeah, it's free.
Yeah, you can just go to gettunnelbear.com, and it's free to sign up. You get 500 free megabytes every single month, so you can try out Tunnel Bear yourself and see if you like it or not. And then if you decide you want to increase your data rate, you can then actually, you know, pay them. But other than that, it's free.
Yeah, and you want to increase the data rate to get unlimited data. That's a really good idea.
So that's gettunnelbear.com, gettunnelbear.com. Sign up for free, 500 free megabytes per month. I want to thank Tunnel Bear for supporting this episode. All right, let's hop into your interview with David for some more weird, wacky stories from the cult of Apple. We'll be right back.
So we have Dave Pierini here, who's going to talk about his latest adventures in reporting on the cult of Mac for the book. And Dave, you've been looking into Apple collectors recently, is that right?
I have, and I've met quite a few interesting people, people who try to be faithful to the historic timeline, collecting both the, you know, having the first Apple One to the latest in Apple TV. I've also met some people who are strictly prototype collectors. But the guy I want to tell you about today is actually a 15-year-old kid from Maine. His name is Alex Jason. And he has what he calls Alex's Apple Orchard. A couple of years back, his parents bought him a dirt bike. And he rode that dirt bike until it broke. He fixed it and wound up trading it in for a computer, for an old iMac G5. He tinkered with it. He upgraded it as far as he could go. And that sort of got him on the path to collecting. So he started mowing lawns in his neighborhood, took all the money he made, and poured it into collecting Apple products. And he now has what some collectors call one of the top 20 collections in the U.S.
No way, really?
And he's 15 years old. I mean, lawn mowing money.
Yeah. How much money do you... That's not Trump money, is it? Making mowing lawns.
Well, you know, I think he... You know, he's, because he's in Maine, he kind of created this lawn service. So he's mowing lawns, but then in the wintertime, you know, as his schedule permits, he's shoveling, snow blowing. So he's got quite a business going, and he's put all that money into his collection. And what's really neat about this is his father has kind of worked alongside him, has supported him. And through some effort, they were able to get an old Carnegie library donated to them. And so they're going to put that collection in this old Carnegie library and open up their own museum sometime next year.
Okay, crazy. So what was in this Carnegie collection that he got?
Well, the Carnegie is just a building. It's an old library. So they're going to put Alex's collection of Apple products.
Oh, I see. Okay.
In the library. So for now, his collection is in the basement of his family's home. You know, he has an Apple One. And as you know, there are, what, 200 made and only 50 are known to still exist.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he, you know, he hasn't shown this Apple One to a lot of people. And in fact, they keep it in a different location because of the value. Oh. Apple Ones have recently gone up for auction anywhere from $350,000 to $1 million in the last couple of years. So
right.
He's got quite a collection. He's also gone to different vintage computer festivals. He's met people. He's met ex-Apple engineers. He's gotten a hold of prototype devices. He's got pretty much every iPod ever made, with the exception of a couple. He's kind of the classic tinkerer, except instead of working on cars in his front yard, he works on computers. And
so how many pieces does he have in his collection overall?
In his 1,000 square foot basement, he's probably got upwards of 350 pieces. And I'm including like a place where he's like storing parts.
So he wants, is he doing, you know, as you said earlier, that sort of classic timeline? He's trying to get one of each machine?
He really is, yeah. And, you know, I think the holy grail for him obviously was a Apple One.
Right.
But he just, you know, he tries to find machines that are still working. And if they're not working, he's, you know, cannibalizing old machines to put parts in to try to make them work. And, you know, he's got quite an ambition to do this. So, and he's got rare models from like Japan. The only thing he doesn't have is a Lisa One.
Huh, okay.
And in talking to collectors, that seems to be a really rare item.
The Lisa one is harder to get than the Apple one. I find that that's somewhat kind of crazy.
So, it really is, yeah.
So how did he get the Apple one? Is that something he's happy to talk about?
Not exactly. So it was kind of sort of funny. He wouldn't say exactly how he acquired this Apple One, but it's and he said he hasn't shown it to too many people. He showed it to me via Skype. But the story about this particular Apple One is that it belonged to somebody who worked at IBM. And it's actually a keyboard that's in a briefcase. And according to the story, this guy went to some sort of IBM convention where they were talking about the future of computing. And he opened up his briefcase and began typing and created this scene. People were saying, "What are you doing?" And this guy's response was, "I'm typing on my personal computer."
This is before laptops, right? So no one never.
This was before
like
laptops. This was the the very first Apple computer. So that's quite a story, and I think as he is able to put his collection in a ultra secure building, there'll be more of a story to go with that computer, but. Yeah, it's really neat. He's formed a lot of relationships with other collectors and former engineers, and that's how he gets some of his pieces.
Very cool. Yeah, great. So, of course, the context for this is that Apple has declined to get involved in creating its own museum or. The executives always say that they're more interested in looking forward than looking back.
Absolutely. And they've said this a number of times on the record. And the most recent public comment I've read is, Phil Schiller basically repeated that very sentence, that we have no interest in looking back. We have our eye on the future. And so really, any sort of museum, any sort of, the so-called shepherds of Apple's history are really in these hands of these private collectors. And we're starting to see museums open up now. I mean, earlier this week, we had a story about a fairly extensive collection that's opened in a museum space in Savona, Italy. There's one in Prague. And a really well-known collector by the name of Lonnie Mims out of Atlanta has an old Comp USA building, and in that is a computer museum, which also has a pop-up, as he calls it, a pop-up Apple museum. And he's got quite a collection. And so I think we're going to see Apple's history on display, but it's just not going to be in Silicon Valley like you would expect. It's going to be in places like the Czech Republic and Italy and Maine and Atlanta and, so things like that.
Crazy. This kid has, the wherewithal and the resources and.
You just don't realize you're talking to a teenager.
Huh, funny. Yeah. So how old is he now?
He's 15.
So he's.
He's freshman in high school.
Crazy, huh?
And by his sophomore year, he'll have a museum.
Yeah, mad. Did you get a good picture of the kid in his collection?
Yeah, it's running tomorrow. So there's a picture of him and his father, and then there's a picture of his quote-unquote apple orchard that's in his basement. I'm also telling you, I'm adding a piece that I wrote this morning about giving people a sense for how easy it is to spend money and collect this stuff. And so I've got a guide of all the things that are on eBay right now that you can buy. If you want, you could spend $95,000 on 3 unopened first generation iPods.
Oh, really?
5 gig, 10 gig, and 20 gig.
Oh, cool. Great. Okay.
So
great.
That should go well with the mix of collection stories next week.
Well, we've run out of time, Dave, so we better cut it out there. So thanks a lot, and good luck with the continued reporting. and we'll check in with you next week.
That sounds great. We'll talk next week.
Alrighty, well, that was such a good interview, Leander. Good job.
Thank you.
I was thoroughly entertained, and I kept wishing it would go on and on and on, but unfortunately, that's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. But if you want to come say hi to us on Twitter, we would love that. I'm at Eric von Leander's L. Caney Busters, BST3R. If you'd like to submit your intro for the show, head on over to thecultcast.reddit.com. Better yet, actually, I'll put a link in the show notes so you can just be taken right to the subreddit. This has been The Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of The Cultcast come out every Thursday nights. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. That was for you, man. Did you just get goosebumps?
Not really, but yeah.
Don't lie. Don't lie. Buster.
Word.
What do you got going on today?
Nothing.
Working hard, you mean?
Yeah.
Are you going to go on a hike or anything?
No way. Hike?
No?
Not today.
Too hot? What
is today, Thursday? No, it's just one.
Yeah.
It's not a weekend.
Oh, you only go on the weekends?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I thought you were going like every morning or something.
No. That's too much.
You want to run every morning?
I try to run a couple days a week, 3 or 4 days
Damn,
a week.
Dude. What are you up to now?
Like 8 miles-ish.
What? Wow, you must be getting pretty svelte.
Oh, I lost a whole like 10 pounds about, so super svelte.
Jeez.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good.
Oh, over like the whole year, that's...
Oh, over the whole year.
That ain't bad. I put on about 10 pounds, so you're going in the right direction.
Leander went on a run, and when he got back, he weighed 10 pounds more.
Oh, my God, yeah. And then it collapsed, too. I've been running on the treadmill. It's like a fucking hippo in a pair of shorts. Pounding along. Sweaty, fat hippo. It's really not pretty.
Do you sit there and eat while you're running, Leander?
Oh, I'm thinking about it, though, and every step is an agony.
Some guy next to you is like, that British guy, man, he gets on that treadmill and he can eat an entire hoagie during his run.
A burrito, yeah.